Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob Bennett Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. The Denver Post called this morning, and as a spokesman for Colorado Right to Life, I was happy to speak with Saja Hindi. It's often interesting to know what was said in an interview and then to see what gets reported. For us, over the last 30 years, we've not had a big problem of being misquoted or misreported, because the things we say to the reporter's ears are so outrageous that they don't feel a need to misquote us. That's the way it is, pretty much. How many interviews done since Friday night by conservatives, by Christian leaders, by anti-abortion leaders? How many interviews did the conservative praise Ruth Bader Ginsburg? What percentage? And the ones that are on national radio and television, it's 100%. And that's real tragic. So how many interviews would the person being interviewed, the conservative, Christian, anti-abortionist, whoever, would he just simply condemn Ruth Bader Ginsburg? How many? Seems like it's not too many, sadly, but there's at least one that we know of. So after we hear this interview, it's going to be a bit hard to understand Saja Hindi, but you'll get her questions and you'll understand them, obviously, also by my answers. But then after that, we'll go to audio from this prospective Supreme Court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett. And we have a YouTube video of her talking about abortion, Roe v. Wade, and it's only maybe 15 seconds long. And people think that we were unfair to her because it's so brief, but if it makes the point, makes the point. So we'll air more of that discussion she had at Jacksonville University in 2016. But let's begin with Saja.
Hello, Saja. This is Bob Enyart with Colorado Right to Life.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for giving me a call.
Sure.
So I am working on a story about Justice Ginsburg's death and all the discussion about abortion in Colorado. And I'm just curious if Colorado Right to Life has a stance on any of that and what you think of the proposed ban in November.
Sure. Well, Justice Ginsburg was not a great woman. She presided over the slaughter of millions of other women in abortion. And on Judgment Day, those women and all the boys that were killed too will rise up against her and condemn her. You don't dismember children ripping their arms and legs off in their mother's womb without consequences.
Do you think this is the time that abortion will be either restricted or completely removed, depending on who's nominated?
There's no evidence for that. That's sort of an absurd perspective on current events.
Why is that?
The U.S. Supreme Court, there's a complete misreading of the history of the court on abortion. Abortion is a Republican Supreme Court justice issue. Roe v. Wade was written by Harry Blackmun. He's a Republican justice. The 7-2 Roe v. Wade ruling, there was a Republican majority on the court, and 5 of the votes for Roe v. Wade were Republican. The court has been Republican ever since. In 1992, the Planned Parenthood versus Casey, there were 8 Republicans on the court and 1 pro-life Democrat. The 1 pro-life Democrat had Justice Byron White. He had dissented in Roe v. Wade. And even in 92, with 5 justices from Reagan and Bush, they continued to uphold Roe v. Wade. There's not a single Republican on the court right now who rejects the central holding of Roe v. Wade, that the unborn child is not a person and does not have a right to life. So it's, I realize that the Republicans have to gin up their base and say, this is our opportunity to end abortion. And the Democrats have to gin up their base and say, abortion is about to end in America. So they're all lying to each other. They're lying to themselves. They want to be lied to. The Denver Post loves to be lied to. They love to lie. And so it's all delusional. Without a single justice on the Supreme Court who acknowledges the unborn child's right to life, how is abortion about to end?
You said without a single justice on the Supreme Court who acknowledges the unborn child's
right to life. We have offered national right to life because they're part of the delusion. They've said for 40 years now, we just need one more judge. If we get one more judge, we'll win. And we've offered them $10,000. There's a check on our website payable to National Right to Life to name a single pro-life justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, to name just one who has ever held that the unborn child has a right to life, whether in an opinion, a dissent, a speech, an article, a law school paper, anything. And there's not one.
And this is, you said, on your website?
Yes.
Okay. So what about in terms of this proposed ban in Colorado? Do you anticipate it will pass in November?
If you regulate murder, you are affirming murder. And so Colorado Right to Life is utterly opposed to any law that says when a baby is this old, you can no longer kill it. So we oppose the ban, and we hope that it fails.
Are you hoping to push any sort of other proposals in future years, or what is your plan moving forward?
Yes, we have had four statewide signature gathering efforts to put personhood amendments on the ballot. We succeeded three times. We think we succeeded all four times, but tens of thousands of our signatures were thrown out, and they changed the rules for notaries. But in those personhood amendments, 48, 62, and 67, we were defeated soundly, but we narrowed the gap from a 3-to-1 loss to a 2-to-1 loss. And that's in a liberal leftist state like Colorado. You don't regulate the gassing of Jews or the lynching of blacks. You don't regulate the dismembering of unborn children. You fight to end injustice, not to regulate it. ISIS, we didn't want ISIS to have to wait 24 hours before beheading a victim. We want to fight to eliminate ISIS and to end the unjust slaughter. By the way, the current due date too late, they're trying to implement exactly what the founder of the National Abortion Federation proposed, Frances Kissling. She wrote in the Washington Post that if we pro-choice advocates, if we don't support late-term bans, then we're going to lose abortion altogether. And so that's in an interesting article against abortion regulations at American Right to Life's website.
Why didn't you pursue a personhood ballot measure this year?
Well, let's see. We've four times in the last 20 years, and obviously takes a tremendous amount of resources, and there's a battle within the ostensible pro-life movement. For example, the Denver Archdiocese has always opposed efforts to abolish abortion and personhood amendments. They've not supported those efforts.
Oh, they have not. Okay.
Right. They only support efforts to regulate the killing of children. The reasons they give over the years are obviously not the true reasons. You know, the reasons they give are things like the court is not ready, but that puts you on like a 150-year plan to end abortion.
So you're saying they want to do it in steps, but others want to go full force at the beginning.
Yeah, doing it in steps means to regulate how people could lynch blacks, how you could gash Jews. That's what doing it in steps means if you believe that abortion is murder, which they believe. So it's inherently immoral to try to regulate the slaughter of children.
Anything else that you think is important to add either about the movement or about what could happen at the Supreme Court and federal level?
No, that's it, I think, Sadia.
It is tragic that so many conservative leaders praise Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mean, either they're just lying and they feel compelled to do it for their career, which is tragic, or they really believe it, which is worse. Be much better if they were just lying. These same leaders, you could take many of their compliments they gave to Ruth Bader Ginsburg and apply them to any mass murdering tyrant, and a lot of them would fit perfectly. You could take entire interviews, and let's say they were in Germany and Hitler, they just found out Hitler's dead, and you have conservatives saying, well, he really lived out his beliefs. He made a tremendous impact on the country, influenced policy. You go on and on and on with much of what conservatives say about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but then they typically, they go beyond that to actually praise her instead of making these superlative statements that actually, when you analyze it, it's just a neutral statement. They actually do praise her, and it doesn't matter if Mao Zedong did some good. It doesn't matter. On the occasion of his death, you don't list the good things he did as a mass murdering tyrant. So now let's go to the great hope of the pro-life movement, Amy Coney Barrett and others. Trump said to expect him to nominate a woman, and from his list of 44 names that are current, there are, looks like, 10 women on the list. Some of the names maybe are a bit androgynous, but it looks like 10 women, and I don't think any of them are black, right? So if Trump nominated a black woman to the Supreme Court, the left, their heads would explode. But that's not worth it, right? Think of all the enjoyment of watching the left go insane. It's very enjoyable. It's delicious seeing their reactions when they lose and when they lose in big ways. But that pleasure is not worth the cost of putting someone in a position of authority where they advocate and could actually accomplish the slaughter of the innocent. So that's where a lot of conservative Christians have allowed themselves to be seduced. It's so wonderful to watch the Democrats be defeated that they don't really care. They put it as very much a secondary or an unrelated issue. What would God say about this? And they think that, well, by defeating the Democrats, they are thereby obeying God. And nothing could be further from the truth. We're going through the book of Jeremiah at Denver Bible Church. And there, the nation knows they're about to be destroyed by the Babylonian army and Nebuchadnezzar. And so their leaders are trying to make a pact with Pharaoh in Egypt so that they could be protected. And God is so angry at them for looking to Egypt instead of looking to him because they become weak and they're ready to be destroyed because of their immorality. But they make these politically pragmatic calculations and they say, you know, Egypt is strong. We're much better off with Egypt. Egypt will help us defeat our enemies. And God says, you think so, huh? You think so? And Judah was utterly destroyed. If what happened then happened today, it would be as though our enemies invaded America and they took Donald Trump and they put him in chains and they gouged his eyes out. They killed his sons before him and they gouged his eyes out. So that would be the last thing he would ever see. And then they carry him off to Iran or something. Back then it was carry him off to southern Iraq. But that would be the equivalent. And so God records all this in the Bible so that we would learn, but we don't do a good job of learning from history or from sacred history. Now we go to the moderator interviewing Amy Coney Barrett at Jacksonville University and their Public Policy Institute. So this was in 2016, and let's listen for things like, does she speak of abortion and mention abortion rights? Does she speak about the killing of unborn children in a very matter-of-fact, nonchalant manner? Let's hear this.
But the question that you raised earlier is a really big one, and that, to me, is that who sets policy for the country, and does judicial and the effect of judicial philosophy on setting that policy? So can you comment on how you see that maybe impacting real-life cases beyond right to die?
Yeah, I think, let's see. So I think there are a number of areas. I can just tick off a couple quickly in constitutional law where that who decides issue would be big. And I actually think there's some in the statutory context that would matter a lot as well. I think the death penalty is likely, you know, the court has had an uneasy relationship with the death penalty for a long time. It came very close to holding the death penalty unconstitutional in the late 70s, early 80s, and then as the court came back, the states wanted the death penalty, really pushed back, and then the court retreated. I think there's a question of who decides there. Is that a state decision? Is that a constitutional decision? I think right to die. I think abortion. I think people phrase the abortion question when they think about the Supreme Court as, is Roe versus Wade going to be overruled? Roe versus Wade actually isn't the law. It was superseded by Casey versus Planned Parenthood. But we've had, you know, 30 plus years of a court that did take, you know, on the whole, a more conservative approach to the judicial role, and Roe versus Wade, Casey versus Pennsylvania, left Roe largely intact, reinstated a new test, but it's still there. I don't think that abortion or the right to abortion would change.
Do you think some of the restrictions might change?
I think some of the restrictions would change. I think that's what we just saw last term.
Stop the tape. When Amy Barrett says Roe v. Wade isn't the law, maybe some people were thinking, yes, all right, Amy. But she clarified, well, there was a ruling after Roe v. Wade about 20 years later, and it was Planned Parenthood versus Casey out of Pennsylvania in 1992. So she says Roe v. Wade isn't the law, Casey is the law. And that was the opinion issued when we had 8 Republican justices, 5 from Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, and 1 pro-life Democrat, and he dissented. It was a total Republican opinion, and it completely upheld abortion. It is wrong to say that abortion is the law. Any law that says you can kill the innocent is illegitimate. So to just state that without clarifying, like it's legal to kill Jews, to just state that, because the law is the great teacher, and people think, well, if it's legal, it's okay to do it. So any true legal giant, any moral hero, is never going to speak in such a way to lead people to think that it's okay to lynch blacks because that's the law. Or it's okay to run Auschwitz because that's the law. or it's okay to kill unborn children because that's the law. So Casey isn't the law unless you're a legal positivist, and that apparently is what Amy Coney Barrett is, a legal positivist who believes whatever the law is, then that's the law. And a judge, a judge's role, this was Antonin Scalia's belief, and she is considered to be in the mold of Antonin Scalia. He was her mentor. Antonin Scalia's belief is that the judge's role is to uphold the law. So if you want abortion, pass abortion. He said this at Pepperdine. Pass a law that says you can have an abortion, and I will uphold that law. That's how to do it. And he said if someone passes a law that bans abortion in the whole country, I'll strike down that law. What in the world, what moral principle is he coming from? No moral principle. He's coming from process and legal positivism, where their process is the most important thing to them. Back when Donald Trump nominated Brett Kavanaugh, and Kavanaugh was bragging about being a judge in the model of Antonin Scalia. And we reported on this show, this 2 years ago, that that was a nightmare because Scalia was asked at that same talk at Pepperdine University in Malibu. I spoke there a few years ago, providing the evidence against evolution and theistic evolution. And Scalia was asked, well, do your personal beliefs come into your judicial philosophy, or is it simply that you uphold the law? In other words, you're just a rubber stamp. And Scalia said, no, your personal views have nothing to do with it. You just uphold the law. And so he was asked by a brilliant student, asked him this. Well, what if you were a judge in Nazi Germany and they asked you to uphold the law? What then? And his answer was this. Well, I guess I would have been convicted at Nuremberg. How's that? How's that for the pro-life hero of the Focus on the Family National Right to Life U.S. Council of Catholic Bishops, the hero, their judicial hero, to say, if I was in Germany, I would have ruled to kill the Jews because that's my judicial philosophy. So then he was asked, well, you believe in the Ten Commandments? Don't any of your personal views affect your rulings as a judge? That's a good question, right? Like, how about do not steal? Or how about do not murder? Or how about do not commit adultery? How about these? So Scalia said this. He thought about it, and he said, no, they don't. He said, well, I guess there's one that would apply. And if you notice, the application is not because it would profane God if you violated this commandment. It's because you would profane Antonin Scalia. He said, I guess the only commandment that applies is do not bear false witness. Don't commit perjury. So when you're in court and you're lying to the judge. How dare you lie to the judge? If you're going to dishonor God and murder the innocent, well, as long as you pass a law and do it properly, well, then I'll uphold your law. That's how evil Amy Barrett is. That's how evil she is for not rebuking her mentor and desperately trying to correct everyone's understanding of the law, morality, and justice. You did hear her say abortion rights, right? She's asked, how does a judge's judicial philosophy affect rulings on moral issues? And she says, well, how would it affect abortion rights? That's like saying you have a right to kill blacks and kill Jews. It is the same exact thing.
The restrictions might change.
I think some of the restrictions would change. I think that's what we just saw last term in the case out of Texas. States, after the Kermit Gosnell affair and all of that, states have imposed regulations on abortion clinics. And I think the question is how much freedom the court is willing to let states have in regulating abortion. I think the question of, you know, the court has held that in some circumstances states can render partial birth abortion illegal, very late term abortions.
Stop the tape. Stop the tape.
I don't think
it's horrific that she just stated that without qualifying, without clarifying it. She said the states can ban partial birth abortion except in some circumstances. In other words, a woman is 7 months pregnant and she goes to Warren Hearn up in Boulder, the late-term abortionist, and he wants to charge her $26,000 to kill her baby. That's about the going price for a late-term abortion. And they realize that, well, there's a national partial birth abortion ruling from the Supreme Court upholding a bogus Republican fraud pro-life law. And so you can't pull the baby out breech, feet first, and then get to where just the head is remaining in the mother, and then put in a scissors into the baby's skull and kill the baby, suck the baby's brains out. You can't do that unless, believe it or not, your pro-life heroes, the Republican Party, put exceptions into that. Unless, well, it turns out, unless the mother's life is at stake. So the life of the mother? Really? There's a seven-month-old baby in the mom, and you need to deliver the baby in order to save the mom, and you're going to stop saving the mom long enough to kill the baby, then you're going to continue saving the mom? What a lie that has been from the beginning. What a lie. And the court also added, the U.S. Supreme Court that she's so proud of, they also added, by the way, if the mother's over-dilated, then the abortionist could do a textbook partial birth abortion. No problem if she's over-dilated, because it'd be hard to cut off the baby's arms and legs if you start pulling the baby out and the baby just sort of comes out. So then go ahead, do a partial birth abortion.
Can render partial birth abortion illegal, very late-term abortions. I think that's the kind of thing that would change. I don't think the core case, the Roe's core holding that, you know, women have a right to an abortion, I don't think that would change. But I think the question of whether people can get very late-term abortions, you know, how many restrictions can be put on clinics, I think that would change. I think another area which people often overlook is statutory. Justice Scalia cared a lot about statutory interpretation. And
stop the tape. Stop the tape. There's more in that talk that Barrett gave 4 years ago, and perhaps we'll air more of it. We link to it at our website. Click in our YouTube channel and go to the Amy Coney Barrett YouTube. And in the description right there, you could click and hear the whole thing. There's a book out titled Outrage, 5 Reasons Why O.J. Simpson Got Away with Murder by Vincent Bugliosi. Let me read this quote. David Kennedy, professor of history at Stanford University, in writing about politicians, says, with the possible exception of lawyers, we hold no other professionals in such contempt. Who among us can utter the word politician without a sneer? Conventional logic would seem to dictate then that since a judge is normally both a politician and a lawyer, people would have an opinion of them lower than a grasshopper's belly. But he goes on to say, when the lawyer, who's quite a politician, becomes a judge, then miraculously people admire them. Miraculously, because they're a judge. But actually, judges are the worst. Of the lawyers and the politicians, you become a judge.